Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Friday means a football Friday with you. Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. Got a lot to chew on today on the show. We will get you a preview of the Redskins and the Giants in 1 hour with Craig Hoffman. And our every homestand appointment with Max Scherzer that has spanned the entire national season at 1 o'clock. Plenty on the Nats as they get ready for the wild card game against an NL Central foe. And the Redskins as they gun for their first win of the season in week 4 at the Meadowlands.
Thank you for not saying against Milwaukee, because that's TBD, my friend.
Yes.
It might be St. Louis. It might be Milwaukee. They're going to play somebody. We're going to figure out who. How about a 5-game sweet piece of the Philadelphia Phillies? Thank you so much for stopping by.
5-game sweeps never happen.
Not in this sport, no.
Because 5-game series do not happen.
That's true, too.
It's very rare, unless you have a postponement. It can't be made up elsewhere, so you do a doubleheader as part of a 4-game series, which Major League Baseball tries to avoid. There was one in the sport last year. The Nats had never done it before. But thanks for coming, Bryce Harper. Thanks for stopping by, as you said, Philadelphia. The Nats, in the same series, eliminate the Phillies, clinch their playoff berth, win 5 straight against the Phils, and take 14 of 19 as if they were playing the Miami Marlins or the Baltimore Orioles over a rival in the division. They are the biggest reason why the Phillies are going to end up not only out of the playoffs, but perhaps under 500 this year.
Well, it's also the biggest reason the Nats are going to the postseason, honestly.
Right.
Losing record against Atlanta. Got the doors blown off by the Mets. The Mets killed them.
The Mets did to the Nats what the Nats did to the Phillies.
Yeah. So you look at 15-4 against Miami, 14-5 against Philadelphia, ticket punched. Think about this, though. The Nats won 90 games, man. The Nats are going to win at least 90 games. If they get swept this weekend, they'll have won 90 games. Starting 19-31, that's incredible. That's number one. But number two, this is statistically the worst bullpen in the history of any playoff team. That's not hyperbolic. This is the worst that it's ever been for a team that's going to the playoffs. Despite all of the 4-game sweep in New York where they had the lead in each one of those games, despite the incredible number of 8th-inning woes, leads blown, tie games that turned into routs for the other team, they still found a way to win at least 90 games. It's unbelievable. Testament to this group.
Well, it's really a testament for me to Mike Rizzo's roster because, number one, he still believes in building with starting pitching. High-end, front-of-the-rotation, legitimate blue-chip arms.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Scherzer, who was gunning for the Cy Young Award before injury, Strasburg, who's had one of his 2 best years of his career, and Patrick Corbin, who's been magnificent in year 1 in D.C. after getting $140 million. You had 2 guys and added a 3rd who are number ones when they're on their A game. 3 guys with 230 strikeouts front of your rotation. That buoys you. It's like jumping into a pool with floaties on. And so that bullpen is the rocky water, but you're not going under because of that rotation. There's a very high floor for a team with that collection of arms in the front of the rotation. And then you add to that the tremendous lineup that was put together and the additions that were made offensively to supplement some power. And you get a team that even with a horrific bullpen, probably going to win right around 91, 92 games this season. And you give Davey Martinez and his coaching staff a whole lot of credit for
Paul Menhart specifically.
Yes.
Different team after they get rid of Lillequist and Menhart takes over slowly but surely. His presence got felt.
That was one of the things that kept coming back. I was texting a bunch of people with the team going back 2 days ago after they clinched. And a lot of them were throwing praise on Davey Martinez's positivity and optimism, not changing when they got down. A lot of people were kind of referencing different players off the bench that had key roles, Gerardo Parra otherwise. But the one thing that everyone kept coming back to is don't forget about Menhart.
Yeah.
You don't forget about the job that he did. So the Nats will now await finding out who and where they play on Tuesday, coming up quick. But it'll either be the Cardinals, who have an identical record to Washington right now, or the Brewers. St. Louis, a team that has outscored their opponents by 101 runs this year, or Milwaukee by just 9 runs this year. I would much rather play the Brewers. I want nothing to do with high-end starting pitchers in that Cardinals rotation. But the hope, here's what you cross your fingers and bank on, I think, if you are a fan of the Washington Nationals. We talked about this yesterday. If those two teams end up after 3 more games tied, which means either the Brewers take 2 out of 3 and the Cardinals get 1, or maybe the Brewers sweep and the Cardinals get 2, and they catch St. Louis, they'd have to play on Monday after the season ends on Sunday, a 1-game playoff to decide who wins the division. Then that team, after burning a number one starter that loses, would have to go to Washington, or in this case, host Washington on Tuesday the next day. So potentially, let's say, you could be the Brewers and play in St. Louis on Monday, then have to go to Washington on Tuesday, and you'd have to do it without the number one starter you just pitched. That's the best case scenario for the Nats. Worst case for me is the Cardinals just win, lose the thing outright, the Brewers win the division, and then you got to play St. Louis on the road with Jack Flaherty pitching.
Yeah, that's not what I'm looking for. Now, you can already see that game where the Brewers, and this is what they've done before, and this is what they'll probably do down the stretch, where they are, your opposing pitcher is Mr. Holstaff, first name John E., and, you know, a guy goes for an inning or two at a time, and that has befuddled the Nats in the past, where they've had to face entire armies of pitching, and they like data. They like to see a guy a couple different times, work out the attack strategy, and then knock him around. That's kind of what their MO is on offense, and then kind of get to weaker parts of the bullpen. Well, Milwaukee, even though their bullpen statistically isn't unbelievable, they've got plenty of arms that are pretty darn good, with Josh Hader in the back end, as devastating as anybody in the sport. So you could see that not working out great, but this is the wild card. I mean, anything can happen in these kinds of games, but I'm with you. The guy I want to avoid is Jack Flaherty, and if it's not necessarily his turn, I actually haven't looked it up to figure out, you know, who's aligned for the starting pitchers. They got to go to Hudson, who befuddled them just a week ago. They've got Adam Wainwright, who shoved it on them a week ago. They got plenty of really good starting pitching in St. Louis. I wouldn't want that environment.
Meanwhile, last night, great Thursday night football action. The NFL, when two good teams are playing in a close game, reminds you on national TV once a week or so why everything else is just battling for second.
Yeah, this is why we're here.
Good football between two good teams, the apex is just higher than everything else has. You don't have a club in the bag that can hit a ball as far as the NFL. It's the furthest ball down the driving range. Last night, the Eagles got to 2-2 in a 34-27 thriller over the Packers. I don't know if you'd say Philly won or Green Bay lost that game. Hard hitting, two players were carted off, scary scenes, some epic performances. Philadelphia ran the ball all over Green Bay's defense, which had been outstanding for 3 games. Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders combined for 157 yards on 26 attempts. Carson Wentz threw 3 touchdown passes. Alshon Jeffrey, Jordan Howard, Dallas Goedert catching the scores. For Green Bay, though, it was a completely different look than what we've seen early this season. In their 3 wins, Aaron Rodgers couldn't really get going. Their passing game was held in check, and Devontae Adams was quiet. Last night, Rodgers, in a loss, threw for 422, 2 touchdowns, should have been more than that. And Devontae Adams had 10 catches on 15 targets and went for a 180, and he left late in the game with turf toe. That would have been 12 or 13 for 200.
It certainly would have. He was on record-setting pace. You know, Flipper Anderson, beware. I mean, that could have been something special.
The difference in this game was twice the Packers got inside the 5 of Philly and weren't able to score in the fourth quarter. 6 plays inside the 5. 6 passing calls from Matt LaFleur. He's got a lot of tough questions to answer today, the young head coach 4 games in. And he botched it, as it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple of those could have turned into touchdowns. There was a drop in the back of the end zone on a 4th down by Jimmy Graham that was almost hauled in.
Would have been a really tough catch, but yeah.
Different story if someone makes a play for you. But the fact is, you kick yourself today if you're LaFleur, presumably, because You called six plays inside the five, and I know you couldn't run it all night long, and everyone was screaming at you every time you ran it and telling you how dumb you were. Then you get inside the five, and you don't run it, and everyone screams at you and tells you how dumb you are. It's funny how easy it is to coach and call plays from your couch. But generally speaking, when you're inside the five-yard line, six times and you don't run the ball once and you don't score, you didn't probably dial up what you should have.
Probably didn't do it right.
Analytically speaking, the closer you get to the goal line, spread teams out, run the ball. He didn't do that. They were unable to get points on any of those six passes.
So between the 20s, they hamstrung themselves a couple times in the second half by early down runs. C.J. Gruden and the Washington Redskins for data points on how to do that, by the way. That's how you slow your offense down. When the defense is stopping you and you run it on first down for zero or one or negative four, which happened a time or two in there, and then they were able to throw it effectively. When you get down close to the goal line, this is what people don't understand. They think analytics is just about hating running. It's not what it is. It's about figuring out what's most effective. Here's what's most effective. On first and 10 from your own 33, a one-yard run is a disaster. That's not good for your drive. On first and goal from the one, a one-yard run is a touchdown.
Right.
Success is different. You spread people out, you hand the ball off. Had they just gone through with handing the ball to Aaron Jones on some of those elaborate play fakes and some of the weird things, you would have had a touchdown, probably two of those times. I get that you feel like you can't run the ball. I understand that. But, man, oh, man, did it not look good. Not coming away with points those two different times, that's the difference in the ballgame. Huge win for Philadelphia.
Aaron Jones, 13 rushes last night for 21 yards. And they didn't have a second option because on the first play of the game, Jamal Williams
vicious hit.
Caught a pass and got speared in the side of his helmet and got carted off the field. At the time, it didn't look like being able to move his lower limbs. It was a petrifying scene. And it was the first of two players to get carted off in front of the country last night, which is no fun. But the 34-27 win for the Eagles, pertinent, especially if Dallas gets to 4-0 in New Orleans this weekend. You're only two games back in the division. 1-3 would have been much tougher to dig out of, obviously. Green Bay falls to 3-1. They're in good shape, but a chance for the Minnesota Vikings now against the Bears this weekend to catch them and to pull even for the time being in the NFC North. Grant and Danny, it is a Football Friday. What would a win against the New York Giants mean for the Redskins? What would a loss mean? We'll get into that next, right here on The Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. It's week four. It's a Football Friday, as always, presented by our friends at the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We're going to be taking your thoughts on Redskins-Giants coming up in just a bit at 800-636-1067. So hop in now and line up your calls at 800-636-1067. I just saw something, though, that I wanted to pass along, and this is a stat from yesterday's Packers game. We just talked about Packers-Eagles, Thursday night football. The difference in the game was that Green Bay didn't score when they were inside the five twice in the fourth quarter. In fact, in the game, Philly, in the red zone four times, scored four touchdowns. The Packers, in the red zone seven times, scored three touchdowns.
There's your game right there.
That's everything you need to know. Green Bay passed on 16 of 20 of their plays inside the red zone. Matt LaFleur was asked not only about that, but about the idea of 6-for-6 passing calls inside the five and whether he regretted it.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. O line, we like the matchup on the outside, Jimmy Graham on the safety, and, you know, that was incomplete. Second down, we tried to stay in goal line thinking that they might think we're running the ball. We ran a keeper, and they played the keeper. Credit to them. The defense end played right up the field, and he was right in Aaron's face. And then third down, we called it was a play with a run-pass option, and Aaron, you know, he saw what he saw, and he pulled the ball, and then the defense reacted, so he had to throw it away. And then fourth down, we tried another pass. So it was, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out for us.
I will say that one thing coaches are doing a lot more now down on the goal line are RPOs, the run-pass options. And the idea is if executed properly, you're going to get the best look. So if a run was the right call there, you probably score on a rushing touchdown. Mm-hmm. If a pass is the right call, you should score on a passing touchdown. Doesn't always work out that way. What happens, though, is a lot of the time the quarterback will pull and he'll throw the ball, and then the coach will get killed for not calling a running play. Now, you could call something much more directly a running play if you want to. You could just call a run. But the RPO, $250,000, that's a keeper. That's an IOU, sir. That's as good as money. That's as good as a run play, as far as I'm concerned, when you call an RPO. Because theoretically, if the run is there, it should be handed off and given to the back to score.
Yeah, I think Philly scored on it wasn't addressed on the broadcast, but I think that touchdown pass to Dallas Goedert was an RPO.
Looked like
just the
it.
Way it looked, right? Where it was, he looked, you know, Wentz looks up at whatever the check is, whatever the read is, either this pass right here is going to be open, kind of a slant, or it's going to be an easy run to whomever was in the backfield.
Before we get into a Redskins win and a Redskins loss would mean and fill in those blanks, I do want to give you my first feel on this game, and I want you to tell me if you think I'm nuts, because I think the Redskins beat the Giants on Sunday.
Hmm.
It seems like very few people are feeling that way as they sit at 0-3. I also think their offense has a, I don't know if it's a feel-good game. I don't know if everybody eats. I don't know if we sit down and everyone leaves fat and puts on spandex pants.
Like, you're not stacking Redskins in DFS this weekend, are you?
Probably am.
Are you really?
Yeah. Here's what I think about the Giants' defense. I think they might be, by the end of this season, the worst in football. And if they're not, I think they're going to be in the bottom three. I don't think they do anything well. I don't think they can stop the run. The Redskins' offensive line worries me. They might be without Brandon Scherff.
Uh-huh.
They're probably going to be without Chase Roullier. Ereck Flowers is not 100% healthy. And they have not run the ball well at all to this point. Having watched plenty of the Giants, though, through 3 weeks, they don't stop the run. This is a week where if I'm Jay Gruden, from when we started game planning New York on, I said we are going to win this game with game script and Adrian Peterson carrying the mail. I think this is the first game where the Redskins look like they did last year. I think they come out and Peterson gets 23 carries for 119 yards. I think the script of the game kind of trends toward they're able to run it. They stick to the run. And they don't major in throwing the ball or necessarily spreading New York out. Now, when they do that, they're going to make some big plays. I think Terry McLaurin will be able to catch 3 or 4 balls down the field. Not home run passes, but I think he'll go for something like 6 or 7 catches for 89 or 95 yards.
Hope he's good to go, cropped up on the injury report with that hamstring, right?
He had the hamstring yesterday. Jay Gruden said he should be fine. If he can't play, then I think Paul Richardson goes 7 for 70.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants also, this is fun, don't defend the pass well either.
Oh, okay.
They don't have anything to hang their hat on defensively. If you think the Redskins' defense has been bad early this season, you're right. The Giants have been worse. Now, where they could lose the game, in my opinion, is I do think the Giants' offense presents some problems with Daniel Jones' athleticism, not having a lot of film on him. It's like a starting pitcher who's thrown one game in his entire career. But you go back and you watch Daniel Jones, who I like. He threw a couple balls up for grabs, could have been picked off twice against Tampa.
Uh-huh.
I think he throws a pick, maybe 2 picks in this game. I think that keeps the Redskins defense playing at a level that will be good enough to win. I'll give you my actual score prediction later in the show, but I'm thinking somewhere around 37 to 40 combined points and a field goal win for the Redskins. I feel good about them beating New York this weekend. I really do.
The injuries that you mentioned is what gives me the most pause here. Because everyone's crowning the Giants after a week where we're not talking about Daniel Jones barely at all if a guy makes a chip shot field goal or 2 extra points. He played well in that game, deserved all the accolades, and that's nice and great.
Don't forget, they were down 28-10 to the Bucs at halftime.
Yes, they should have lost the game. A chip shot field goal, and they're 0-3, and people aren't feeling the same way about the Redskins going up there as, you know, because the Redskins getting the doors blown off on Monday night. The Giants are 0-3. If the Redskins are 0-3, people would be talking about this with a little bit more confidence. I think the injuries to the Redskins, though, are so key. An offensive line that already couldn't run block is now about to get worse. And I think they're really going to struggle without Cousin Chase Roullier in there, with all due respect to Tony Bergstrom. I'm hoping that they can take advantage of the bad Giants defense. Tampa Bay certainly did. They had their most productive offensive day. You look at the other teams that they've played, again, very comfortable moving the ball in any variety, any manner of that you choose, you can get up and down the field. The Bills ran for, I think it was 240 yards in that game, or 150 yards in that game, rather. They could do whatever they wanted. I'm hoping the Redskins are able to do that. Maybe it's got to be a bit more by design than by just pure smash mouth.
Right.
Because you're dealing with backup offensive linemen.
The Giants have allowed 35 to Dallas, 28 to Buffalo, kind of called off the dogs, and 31 to Tampa Bay. Should have been 34 with a chip he missed. They are 31st in yards per play allowed, over 6.8 every time you line up. They are 31st in passing yards per play. Now, they're top 10 in rushing yards per play, completely misleading. They are 23rd in rushing defense. And again, I don't think they can stop the run at all. They don't pick people off. They're bottom 8 in the league right now in interceptions. They're middle of the pack sacks per pass attempt. They're 30th in terms of how many first downs they give up. They don't do anything well.
Yeah, their defense is wretched.
I think you will be able to score on them, and I think you'll be able to move the ball. But we can get into next what it would mean if they win, what if they would mean if they lost, or they lose. But I'd also be curious what you think of that take, because everyone seems to be jumping right now on the Redskins are going to be 0-4 going into New England. And next we can discuss just how devastating that would be for this coaching staff.
Oh, man.
Grant and Danny on the Fan at 10:45, by the way. If you didn't hear the audio yesterday on the station, Steven Strasburg, the first pick in the 2009 draft, struck out Bryce Harper, the first pick in the 2010 draft, three times. We'll play those strikeouts for you on G&D on the Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sunday, 1 o'clock, Redskins, Giants in East Rutherford at the Meadowlands. If the Redskins win, what's it mean? Redskins lose, what might that lead to? 800-636-1067 is the number. Your calls are coming. Danny, why don't you go first? What would a Redskins win mean?
Calls off the dogs. The dogs, the wolves, any kind of canine breed, really. I'm thinking more of animals that travel in packs and hunt.
What about the dingoes?
Maybe the dingo ate your baby. The wolves are at the door.
Hyenas are not a canine breed?
I believe they are.
Are they?
Yeah, I think they're cousins.
It calls off the hyenas.
It calls off the hyenas, because here's what's happening. Everything's surrounding. Nothing is good. Remember, here is the baseline status quo for this organization. Their best player hates them and won't play for them. $20 million man, the most expensive player on the roster, will not play for them and won't play ever again. Their best offensive and most consistent weapon over the years is concussed to the point that it's so grave that people are talking about him retiring. That's before anything else happens. That's before any off-field dramatics. That's before any kind of Bruce Allen influence, Dan Snyder, or otherwise. No team could overcome that. Not one team in this league could overcome. Best player not playing, $20 million quarterback not playing for them, and best offensive weapon not giving it a go. Maybe the Patriots in that crappy division could muster a pretty good season, but nobody else. No one else could deal with that, okay? And the Redskins, who, even if those three guys are healthy and playing and don't hate the team, going about their business, aren't as good as probably 27 or 28 teams in this league anyway. So here's what it would mean. We don't have to do any who's getting fired. We don't have to do any what should the move be. How do you satiate this fan base? It's a little panacea. It puts a little salve over the wound. Doesn't fix everything, because they're broken. They're irrevocably damaged. This year is going to be awful unless they start making it about the development of Dwayne Haskins. But right now, it's as bad as it can be, and it could get worse. It staves off all of that stuff, Grant. We're talking about, you know, maybe building something. No one's talking about beating the Patriots, but you start saying, okay, now we can have some relevance. Now we can have meaningful games. If you're 0-4, oh my God, can you imagine?
A win means that people's jobs are saved.
Yeah.
I don't think that's overstated. And if they lose to the Giants, and this gets into the what if they lose side of things, then, first of all, this season is headed for the iceberg. Iceberg straight ahead. It's over. We are done. This ship is going to go down. Hopefully enough lifeboats are on board, and if not, we're going under, and we're not dying old women warm in our bed, okay? You're spreading out eagle on that door, and Leo DiCaprio, who's got enough room to lay next to you, is actually going to die because you're very comfortable making a big, giant human X, Rose, selfishly.
Selfish.
She was so selfish with what she did. But anyway, If you lose, it's the end. Whether it happens right away or not, I'm not sure, because they haven't fired coaches in season. But it's the end for Jay Gruden. It is the end for Greg Minuski. It is the end for the vast majority of this staff. Because you're on your way to 4-12 or 3-13. Just think about it. To get to 4-12 after that, you're going 4-8, which is a fairly normal stretch around here in a year where, in the second half of the season, there are some injuries. So it's over. And the question is, how many people keep their jobs for the rest of the season, or do they just start blowing people out to get a head start on hiring? Because you're playing New England after that. So a loss this week does not mean 0-4. Here's how you have to think about this. A loss this week means 0-5. That's the difference. You're playing this week for 1-4 through 5 to have a win before the sixth week of the season. Otherwise, you're actually going to be 0-4 through well over a month of football. So that's what's at stake this weekend.
And you and Miami, two 0-5 teams, are gonna match up.
Right.
Right.
And you'd have to be favored.
Yes.
Not by a lot, because they're getting 3 at home. I would imagine you'd be -3, something like that.
Say 4 points, benefit of the doubt, right?
4 feels heavy. 7-point favorites on a neutral site? I don't know.
Can you imagine?
But then you probably get that win in that sixth game. But you're playing to avoid 0-5. You know who starts 0-5? Teams that are tanking, like Miami. Uh-huh. Teams that have a chance to pick first in the draft. Teams that are going to have a new coach next year. That's the difference. Now, if they win, some of the fallout could also be individualized to players. Case Keenum got back on track, and the Dwayne Haskins chance from FedEx Field.
They go away.
They're not going to go away.
Let me rephrase. They're quieter. They're quiet.
The calling for a quarterback change. The questions about, is Colt McCoy healthy? What's going to happen with the depth chart? That's all pushed back a week until after you get blitzed by the New England Patriots, literally and figuratively. Let's go to Kyle in Fairfax on Grant and Danny. What would a win mean? What would a loss mean for the Redskins?
Good morning, guys. Buddy. I think that it's really tough to disagree with anything you're saying. I think all you can accomplish by getting a win from the overall scheme is calling off the dogs. And I mean, assuming this team can beat the Dolphins, we're talking maybe about one last optimistic conversation on October 17th saying, well, maybe if they can beat the 49ers, they'll be 3-4. That's the ceiling for beating the Giants, is, you know, having a few more weeks before we get into the whole every show is about Jay Gruden and Dwayne Haskins. But I'm also thinking it's the way, if they win, they need to win with a good defensive performance, because three quarterbacks they've played have averaged 80% passing. I don't really know what to expect from the offense due to all these injuries, but if the defense lets Daniel Jones look like a superstar the way they just let Mitchell Trubisky play, I mean, I don't know what is going to happen next week, because that was supposed to be the glue, and now after 4 weeks, all bets are off if the defense plays poorly again.
Well, quarterbacks are just having 7-on-7 drill, walking the parks against this defense. It started with Carson Wentz, who's good. It continued the next week with Dak Prescott, who in this offense that the Cowboys have designed looks like he's primed for a breakout, huge season. But then it continued with Trubisky, who is not accurate, and who may not be a starter for the Bears next season. They made him look like a Pro Bowler. And he still missed throws, and
sure. He
left points on the board. And trust me, in Chicago this week on the radio, their storyline is still that they won, and they won big, and Trubisky was better.
Yeah.
But Trubisky wasn't good enough to quell any of their concerns. And he went out, and he was 18 of 21 at one point, just tossing the ball to his buddies with nobody around. It's as if you're playing against air when you're playing against this defense right now.
Second worst third down conversions allowed in the history of the NFL through 3 weeks at 63%. Quarterbacks, anecdotally, it's always hard to know what assignment's what, but just for the point of reference, the Redskins' number one corner is Josh Norman. Quarterbacks have a 122 and change rating when throwing at him, which would lead the football, which would be the best quarterback rating anyone has ever put up over the course of a season. Teams can do what they want against the Redskins' defense. That tells you the story of kind of why they're 0-3, how they're here. It hasn't really been the offense's failings. This past week against Chicago, 5 turnovers, you're not going to win that game. But goodness gracious, if you're just league average, if you're just okay on defense. This is a much different start to the season, but they haven't been. They've been disastrous on that side of the ball. And I can't imagine, let's say, just for the sake of argument, think about if you're Dan Snyder in your owner's box. You're up there stewing while the defense gives up another, you know, 9 of 14 on third down to the Giants without Saquon Barkley, and it's Daniel Jones, the other kid draft pick, doing it to you. You're going to demand a pound of flesh. Aren't you going to come down post-game and tell Jay Gruden you got to fire somebody?
Well, I think he's probably – I don't know that he's told him to fire anyone, but I think he's been demanding that for a few weeks. I also think his decisions are made up. I think it's over for a lot of people already. And this weekend, while it's not going to change that, it's just going to add to the confidence he's gotten, whatever decisions he's already made. It is a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet. For real sports fans, coming up today on this Football Friday, Craig Hoffman at 11, our Redskins beat reporter. Will Brandon Scherff play or not up front? Just how patchworked will this offensive line be? Max Scherzer of the Nationals, is he going to pitch in the play-in game? We will ask him. He's on the show today at 1. And speaking of the Nats next, you will hear 3 Steven Strasburg strikeouts of Bryce Harper. This is audio porn. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big thank you might be in order for Joe Madden. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
How so?
Joe Madden, who is a good pal of Davey Martinez's.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he hired Martinez for his first big league coaching job with the Rays and made him his bench coach and brought him to Chicago and helped him get interviews for years before he took over for the Nats. Joe Madden, as you know, Danny, is the manager of the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
I will read from ESPN.com.
Please do.
The Cubs will have a say in the National League Central race after all, albeit as spoilers. The Cubs finished their regular season this weekend in St. Louis, where the first-place Cardinals are holding on to a one-game lead on the surging Milwaukee Brewers. Already eliminated from the postseason this week, Cubs manager Joe Madden was asked if he'll play his regular lineup against the Cards. "We're going to put a good team out there, but of course, they're going to bitch," Madden said with a laugh. "Of course they are. I get it. But quite frankly, there are certain things I don't give a bleep about, and that would be one of them." He has told the Brewers he doesn't care what they think about his lineups. The idea being he might play a bunch of young guys. He might play just a B lineup, a September call-up type game. And the Brewers are basically saying from afar, you owe it to baseball, you owe it to us and everybody else. No one's come out and said this, but this is like the thinking that you have to play, you know, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo and Javier Baez. He's not healthy, but the point is,
right,
play your best players. And Joe Madden's saying, no, I'll just play who I want to play, thanks.
Or I can do exactly what I want as the manager of the Chicago Cubs.
Cubs pitchers Kyle Hendricks and Yu Darvish have been shut down. Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez are all injured right now.
Yeah, the first base bag got Chris Bryant, by the way.
Yes, it did.
The bag monster.
Alec Mills will start Friday's series opener against Dakota Hudson. Cole Hamels is supposed to pitch a few innings on Saturday, although he may not go his normal start. They may pull him out quick. Hamels has been missing some time with a sore shoulder and is pitching only to prove he's healthy enough, basically entering free agency. It seems like they're doing him a solid so that he could just show teams, I'm okay, let me go out there for 5 innings, and then they'll throw some money at me this offseason. But the Brewers are one game back, and they think the Cubs should be doing everything they can to beat the Cardinals. And I'm not going to sit here and say Joe Madden would purposefully lose a game. There's no way he would do that. But it is interesting that his really good buddy Davey Martinez could probably benefit from Milwaukee not winning. And that's factored into this. I don't think it'll cross his mind at all, but it's all part of the conspiracy theory here.
Yeah, here's what I would say. If you got yourself into a position where you're kvetching about some other team having to do something on your behalf,
yeah, then shut up.
To me, that's a losing proposition.
Right.
You had plenty of chances, Milwaukee, to probably do better in April, in May, in June. Different games would have happened. If the Nationals were in that same spot and Nationals fans are calling us going, It's the integrity of the sport. I don't care about any of that. You blew a lead against the Mets when you should have won a game. I have no patience or time for that. Each team should do what they see fit for their both short-term and long-term benefit. Whatever you think is the right course, do that. If it turns out it's wrong, fire those guys and bring someone else in who will do the right thing. I have no issue with Joe Maddon deploying whatever lineup he sees fit.
Yeah, do the best that you have to do for your team, whatever that
100%.
Means. Doesn't necessarily mean winning this game, by the way. It could mean figuring something out about a guy who's about to be a free agent or trying to determine which young guy might be worth taking a good look at this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
You owe nothing to the Brewers. You owe nothing to baseball. You right. owe something to the Cubs. That's your employer. Yesterday, with the Phillies and the Nats matching up at Nats Park, we got the matchup that for a lot of us is just really cool to see, Strasburg versus Harper. Those two guys were the first two culture changers and the first two acquisitions in the draft that were going to spin this whole thing forward for Washington. They lost 100 games back-to-back years. And when they did, back in 08 and 09, it turned into the first picks in the 09 and the 10 drafts. And in 09, Strasburg was the guy, and in 2010, the next year, Bryce Harper was. You never saw them match up being on the same team,
right.
And now you get to. And yesterday they did, and three times Steven Strasburg struck out Bryce Harper. In case you missed it, we thought you may want to hear what those sounded like.
And now Steven to the bell. Kick and the pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a curveball. Well, now he has struck him out. Now there's that. The 2-2 from Strasburg. Swing and a foul tip. Held on to by Gomes. 96 on the elevated fastball. As Strasburg fans Harper for the second time in a row. Strasburg ready. 3-2 pitch. Struck him out on a changeup. And that's strikeout number 10 for Steven Strasburg. He fans Harper for the third time. It's Strasburg's 47th career double-figure strikeout game and the seventh time this season he's hit double digits.
Strasburg's final start of the year, he did nothing to hurt his cause in any debate they're having internally about who to start in the play-in game. Six innings, one run, 10 strikeouts against a Phillies team he has owned throughout his career. So Harper's three strikeouts get Strasburg into double digits. Yesterday and over 250 for the first time in his career.
Very cool.
Strass's season, 33 starts. Maybe that's the biggest deal.
It is.
He didn't miss a start, 209 innings, 18 wins, a 3.32 ERA, 251 Ks in 209 innings for Steven Strasburg, who had a batting average against of 210, which is the second lowest he's had since 2013. Just an amazing season for him. You hope we get to see a lot of him in the playoffs.
Yeah, you hope it's more than just a one and done. Found a way to kind of pace himself and stay healthy. Worked out an incredibly high rate in the offseason, according to people that were in the know about that. And statistically, if you look at, you know, he's had years where he was sub three. I mean, they had that 2017 year where he was pitched to a 2.5 and probably the best pitcher in baseball in the second half, but didn't make those 33 starts. Still missed some time there. So career high in starts, career high, or the second highest innings pitch totals he's ever had, career high in strikeouts, a lot of really good things this year where the ERA doesn't just tell the entire story.
I don't know when the best time to talk about this in detail is out of respect to the Nationals, their fans, and all the excitement right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got 4 years and $100 million left on his deal, and he's probably going to opt out, or at least there's a good chance that he will. I'll say this. I was talking to a high-ranking executive on a non-Nationals team recently, and they said they'd be very surprised if he didn't opt out. They said, I don't know why he wouldn't.
Mm.
If nothing else, just hold them over the barrel for more money and get a raise. But everyone's talking about Anthony Rendon very likely hitting the market and potentially leaving, which is probably going to happen. Steven Strasburg could also be gone next year as well.
Think about that landscape.
Something to think about. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter. We'll ask him next on this Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Which offensive lineman will be in and out? Several missing practice the last couple days for the Redskins.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.